I am not Michael Patrick Leahy. This is Aaron Gulberson. Michael Patrick Leahy is out, but I'm in doing my best to support him in his little time away. You're stuck with me the rest of the day as well as tomorrow, but we're going to go right to our newsmaker line. We have probably the greatest governor Virginia ever had, and the Trump-appointed ambassador to the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, Jim Gilmore. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Aaron. Good morning to all of your listeners in Tennessee and beyond, I guess.
Yeah, we've got quite the following, sir. You know, we're all getting, we're seeing, you know, gun-related stuff all over the news, and I'm not sure that people are quite as up on Ukraine, but that is your area of expertise. So can you just tell us what's happened in the last week or so in Ukraine and what's been going on?
Well, I know that your listeners follow it somewhat, but the Vladimir Putin theory and game has always been to conduct a conquest here and to take over Ukraine and to make that the first essential building block in reassembling the old Russian Empire. And I think that your listeners have to always ask the question, do we matter? Does it matter to us? Do we care? And I think the short answer is a guy who was a soldier during the Cold War and assigned to West Germany during the Cold War, I can tell you that it does matter. Europe's independence and sovereignty matters. It has to remain independent and sovereign if the United States is to remain safe. So I believe that it does matter, and I believe that Putin's efforts are a big picture difference. Now, of course, your listeners can look at the tactical stuff, the stuff that's going on every day on the battlefield, and that's newsworthy. And what's going on right now is that the first Russian attack on the capital and to attempt to take over the whole country of Ukraine, as I just said, failed. Because the Ukrainian army, frankly, heroically decided it was going to fight for its independence and its sovereignty. But then they dropped back and they said, okay, in that case, we'll just go ahead and attack from the area we already control, which is this Donbass, eastern Ukraine area, and we'll expand out from there. And that's the battle that's going on right now. It's an artillery battle. The Russian practice is to use long-range artillery to pulverize everything in front of its army, and then to march the army in. The only way that the Ukrainians can resist that is with its own long-term artillery and rockets, and now the United States and the Western allies are starting to supply that, but it hasn't completely reached the battlefield yet. So it's a little bit of the actual battle for Ukraine is still in doubt, but the Russians are trying to grind them down. And that's this war of attrition is one that I think is very dangerous for the Ukrainians. So that's my summary of the big picture.
What do you expect the next step the United States to take?
I think the U.S. is now planning to send long-term rockets, long-range rockets, together with long-range artillery. Step by step, we've been increasing the support to Ukraine, as well as the Germans, the British, who have been magnificent, by the way, and the other Western allies. The Eastern allies are the ones you want to watch. They're the ones that are most in danger from a Russian triumph, because if the Russians triumph, then they begin to put at least political pressure on those Eastern European countries that used to be part of the Soviet Empire. And as I want to repeat for your listeners.
Yes, sir. I think we might have lost him.
Subjugation of Eastern Europe and really all of Europe, if possible.
Governor, this is Clint Brewer. Question for you about Russia and its resources. The Russian army, whether it's been the Soviet army or prior iterations, it's always been largely about conscription. They're not always the most bought-in soldiers to the cause. And there's been some instances where the Ukrainians have been able to drive them out of key cities, actually beat them back because they're defending their country. How long can Russia sustain this? How long can Putin's army sustain this before their will just clearly is not there, or before their numbers are not there?
Well, that's, of course, the argument here, the question about what's going on. Putin depended upon a quick victory. And, in fact, the United States was sending that message at the beginning of the war. There was going to be a quick victory by the Russians. And the Ukrainians said, well, just wait just a minute. We'll see about that. And they're now fighting for their independence and their sovereignty. And they have lost thousands upon thousands of people. Let's remember that these aren't just numbers on a list. These are mothers. These are fathers. and brothers and uncles who have given their lives for Ukrainian independence. And that is, it means they have a big stake in this war. Now, as for the Russians, on the other hand, they don't have really a stake in this. There's a lie going on that says that the Ukrainians are Nazis. That's just nonsense. The only people who are behaving like Nazis here are the fascist aggressors coming out of Moscow. Sooner or later, the Russian people who are losing people, too, are going to wake up and say, hey, wait a minute, what's this all really all about? I mean, Ukraine's really not a threat to us. What's this all about? And so political and policy and messaging victories are important in this. But you're direct to your point. The Russians are losing people, too. And the question is, how long can this go on? And the answer is, it can go on for a while. Because some conscripts will fight and some won't. The ones that won't will be dealt with in another way by the Russians, and the ones that will be used for this war.
How does I'm always curious on these matters. Do you buy the intelligence that says that Putin was here, and I think it was April, and that he was being treated for, and I could be getting the date wrong, but he's being treated for cancer, and is his grip on power seemed to be tenuous, and is this an attempt to increase it or save face? Or, you know, it's an interesting question.
Well, we really don't know whether he's got cancer and dying or not. There's been these rumors, but I would be cautious against all these rumors that go around in the Western press that say, well, he has cancer, well, the conscripts won't fight, well, the Russian army's going to collapse. You know, they're playing a big game here. They're playing a big game, the reassembly of the Russian Empire, which means that they have political sway over Europe, is their ultimate objective. And that's as significant as Stalin or Peter the Great, whose, I think, birthday they just celebrated, by the way. That's what Putin is doing. He's trying to make his place in history by, once again, raising Russia up from being basically just another European country to being one of the dominant powers on the earth. And the question is, does that matter to the United States? And as a guy that's seen all this before, I think it does matter. It does matter to the people of this country. I keep hearing, you know, stories, well, we shouldn't be sending this money. We should be spending the money on something else. Well, the United States is just going to have to do what it has to do to protect its safety. And, of course, the next question is, well, this doesn't have anything to do with American safety. And I assert to you that it does. This is a long-term deal here, and we could get into a much larger war that's much more expensive, that costs American lives, and we don't want to do that. We now have an ally that's willing to fight for itself, and we ought to remember that.
What do you think that, you know, Putin, of course, increases his threats whenever one of his border countries or countries near him is talking of joining NATO or furthering relations with Europe. Do you think any of these countries will join NATO, and what will Putin's reaction be?
Well, first of all, I was in Ukraine myself in May of 21 and visited about 16 ministries over there, and the message from all of them was the same. It was an intentional message to me, which was, we want to join NATO. Well, what the big significant difference is, this invasion, this war that's been initiated by Russia, which is very dramatic. There's certainly a message to...
I think we're fading out for a second.
New neutrality position, and are willing to join NATO. That is the most important development in Europe since the reunification of Germany deal. So can you hear me all right?
We've got you. Yes, sir. You faded out for a second, but we got you.
It looks like the countries are rallying to NATO. Of course, OSCE is a diplomatic organization. It contains all these countries, including Ukraine and Russia and Turkey and everybody else. And it's an opportunity for diplomatic messaging and positioning, which causes the political consequences one way or the other. But NATO is the military alliance, and people want to be under that umbrella. This is a very different situation. We're seeing a war here, a conventional war with tanks, missiles, and artillery under a nuclear umbrella. Because we have this ultimate real problem, and that is that the Russians just keep pouring into a different country, which they consider to be part of a province of their country. And right now, Russia is off limits. Why is that? Well, because they have nuclear weapons. So this is a whole different situation now that we're seeing in the 21st century. We're all just trying to figure out how this is going to work while keeping the American people safe.
Governor, this is Clint Brewer again. You've said that several times, and keeping the American people safe, and just for the benefit of our listeners, excuse me, what are our obligations, and what does this situation have to do with keeping America safe? You'll hear a lot of people in the conservative movement be very tough on China when they talk in terms of, you know, military action or simply holding the Chinese accountable, whether it's in trade or military exercises, but then kind of give Russia a pass. Explain just at a rudimentary level what the U.S. obligations are in regards to our allies and NATO.
Well, we have an obligation to our allies in NATO. If a NATO country is struck by a military attack by anybody, we all have a mutual defense agreement that we will respond on behalf of each other. Now, that's the NATO alliance. And that's why a lot of these countries want to be in NATO, including Georgia, including Moldova, including Ukraine. They all want to be in NATO, and so far they are not in NATO. But I take the position that we have to look after ourselves. We have to look after the geopolitical situation one way or the other. We don't have an obligation to respond on behalf of Ukraine, but we have an obligation to ourselves to understand the geopolitical situation and understand that this is a war that's going on right now in Europe. And it shatters the international order. I had a meeting yesterday in which I said, well, you know, what about this? So what's going to stop the Chinese from attacking Taiwan? What's going to stop other countries? And, you know, one of the pushbacks that I heard was, well, because we are taking other action to basically cut off Russia from the international situation, from the banking, from travel, from education, from money, with sanctions. And that other countries in the world would have to be cautious about engaging in aggression when they see the unified response of the West centered around NATO. There's an argument to be made on that, but I think fascists tend to say, well, look, we can just go on and take our land, crush people, reorganize our political situation, and after a while, the Westerners will get bored. And the conservatives will say, well, this is not our fight. And the Americans will say, well, we've got to worry about other issues like gun control and things like that. And we'll just not worry about it anymore. They'll get their conquest, and then we'll go back to business as usual with Russia. That, I think, is their geopolitical gamble on their own behalf and the thing we have to be cautious about. If we're really going to use all these other elements besides military to deter aggression, the American people are going to have to get ready for a long haul on this. And I don't know whether we can really do that or not. It's going to require strong political leadership. And right now, we're doing okay day to day, but in the long term, America is going to require strong political leadership to deal with a new and more dangerous world.
Governor and also Ambassador, my friend, I appreciate you joining us. You can I'm going to give you a Twitter shout out if you want to follow Governor and former Ambassador Gilmore on Twitter. It's @gov_Gilmore. Governor Gilmore, I really appreciate you joining us this morning, and we appreciate your expertise.
It's wonderful to have a chance to talk to your listeners. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir. This is Aaron Gulbertson, and for Michael Patrick Leahy, we'll see you in the next segment.